Hi, this is Josh Hankin from SandbagFitnessSystems.com, and today I'm joined by Greg Everett from Catalyst Athletics. Greg, I came across some time ago, actually. He puts out a great publication known as the Performance Menu, and basically I was really intrigued with a lot of the innovative ideas they come up with. Greg seemed very honest and seemed to get a lot of great authors to put in well-thought-out training information, so I got an opportunity to meet Greg some time ago at Mike Bergner's place, and was even more impressed with his personal knowledge and his ability to perform and practice what he preached. So I want to invite Greg to share a little bit of his knowledge with us. So I want to thank you again, Greg, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So, Greg, for those listening that aren't really familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got started in the industry, and what you've been up to?
Sure. I became a personal trainer, and I hate that term, but it's what it was, when I was about 18. And kind of messed around with that for a while, got really sick of it, just primarily because of the commercial gym atmosphere and the kind of clientele I was being saddled with, which I'm sure a lot of people can commiserate with me on that one. But so I kind of took off for a while, did a few other things, and then I was living in Chico, California, Northern California, and I met Rob Wolf, who had just started a new gym called CrossFit NorCal, and at the time I think it was maybe the fourth CrossFit affiliate at the time, and I had never heard of CrossFit. I had no idea what it was, and he invited me. I was training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with the guy he shared space with, so he invited me to come train with him. I said, yeah, it looks kind of stupid, but sure, I'll check it out. And day one I thought it was ridiculous, and by day two I was like, oh, this stuff is incredible. So he and I became really good friends. We trained together, and after a few months, he and his now wife, Nikki, were changing locations, moving to a larger place, getting their own space, and they asked me to become one of the partners in the business. So that's really what brought me back into the training business after my little hiatus there, and got me really excited again. And Rob Wolf has been a big motivator, big inspiration for me. So I'm very grateful for him for bringing me back into the fold and really getting me excited about this stuff again. And about 2 years ago, about 4 years ago, Rob and Nikki and I started the Performance Menu Journal, which you mentioned, and so that's been going for about 4 years now. And about 2 years ago, I decided that I was kind of bored with what I was doing, and I missed competitive athletics, so decided to knuckle down and get into the weightlifting world exclusively. So moved down to San Diego County to train with Mike Bergner. So I'm one of his athletes, and I now train all my people out of his gym. I train myself out of his gym, and Amy and Naya, who works for me, and she trains her people out of there. So we've got a nice little kind of home gym there, and a lot of good people coming in and out. So
that's awesome. And it's quite a setup, when unfortunately, if you haven't had the opportunity to get out there, it's pretty awesome. Just the atmosphere itself. It's definitely not big on fancy equipment, but as we all know, that's not a prerequisite to getting great training results. So
right.
That's pretty darn cool.
It's so great. It is such a great facility because, like you said, there's a rowing machine, which is great, and but the rest of it, there's a bunch of dumbbells, a bunch of barbells, a lot of bumps, sandbags, kettlebells, pull-up bars. And, there's nothing I want that isn't there. You know what I mean? I'm never doing a workout or training a client that, man, I wish I had this. It's everything that I feel I need for, effective training is right there.
And a lot of people listening to this are probably on the same boat. And I'll be honest with you, Greg. One reason I wanted to get you on the call is what you mentioned about being affiliated and involved with CrossFit for some time, because I think CrossFit is one of those growing, systems that you either love it or you hate it. And I don't find too many people too far in between. And I know you're one of the more educated people about it. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the whole CrossFit system and maybe likes, dislikes, what you think about it, and where you see it going.
Yeah, it's definitely it's remarkable how polarizing that issue has become, and I think a lot of us who've been around for a long time kind of saw that coming, and it was one of our concerns. And to put it as Rob Wolf said the other day, is dick swagger. You know, there's a lot of attitude within CrossFit, but, you know, if you really stop and think about it, that attitude exists in every other organization out there. I mean, whether it's NSCA, ACSM, you know, whatever it is, there are people who think that what they're doing is the best way, the only way, and that everyone else is a jackass. And unfortunately, you know, that's an element that I wish was not involved, and it makes it very difficult to be associated, you know, with an organization that has so much bad rap, especially when, you know, in my opinion, it's really not an accurate representation of CrossFit as a training method or as a community. And, you know, I think a lot of the problems that people have with CrossFit are really, they don't understand exactly what they're talking about. Mike Boyle is a great example, and I don't want to get myself embroiled in the whole Mike Boyle versus CrossFit thing, but I do want to mention it. You know, a lot of the points he has made and is making are based on, you know, misunderstandings of the program. And the same with the guys at T-Nation and Charles Polkin and all these guys. And I think that, you know, given a good exposure to the program and to the right people within the community, I really do think they would change their tune when it came to CrossFit. And, you know, I wish they had that opportunity. And I would love, you know, any of those guys are always welcome to come down and hang out with me. And I'd love to show them what it's all about, without the attitude, without the arguments and all that crap. And I think that, like any kind of grassroots organization that has growing very, very rapidly, there are going to be problems associated with that growth. And one of them is that it's attracting so many people from, you know, such a you know, myriad backgrounds, that the quality control is very difficult. And that's true, like I said, for any organization, the NSCA. I mean, for God's sake, you have the NSCA with the CSCS certificate, which, you know, of course I have, and more for insurance reasons than anything else. But to see that the way, you know, the way that they teach the Olympic lifts, the way that NSCA certified coaches teach Olympic lifts, it's embarrassing. And so to have someone outside of CrossFit say, oh, well, CrossFit's ridiculous because they don't know how to teach the Olympic lift, so that people don't know how to perform, it's like, well, yeah, a lot of them don't. And, you know, I admit that, and I think it's a big problem. But it's no worse than any other group of strength coaches out there. I mean, you can go to any high school and most colleges out there, and to see what they're doing with the Olympic lift, having no association with CrossFit, not even knowing what it is, and it's awful. I mean, it's a scary thing to see what some of these guys are doing in the weight room. So I think a lot of that is you know, unfounded, and it's just a result of, you know, seeing this thing from a distance and for whatever reason being butthurt about it and not taking the time to get involved and to ask the right questions of the right people. And I don't even know.
Well, I think, yeah, I totally agree. I think you nailed it by saying, you know what, you know, every organization that I've seen grown, you know, over the last few years, you know, whether, you know, how positive you think it is at the time, you know, is definitely ends up, you know, with people that maybe taking a different direction that was initially intended. So I think it's important to state, you know, the one reason that, you know, I said right off the bat on the phone call that I wanted to interview you is because I think it's important to have the right representation of, you know, certain systems. And obviously we know that, you know, CrossFit's not the only thing that you do, and we'll get into that in a moment. But, you know, my experience with you and Rob and Rob Wolf and Stephen Roche, for example, are drastically different than my experience with other people. But the same can be said, like you said, with the NSCA, kettlebell training, and, you know, strongman. You can go down the list and find the same factor. So you sort of mentioned, you know, a lot of misconceptions about CrossFit. What do you think are maybe the top few that, you know, people repeatedly just don't understand about the CrossFit program?
Well, I think one is that the primary and sometimes only goal is just to destroy people, you know, not to provide them an effective workout, but to just hurt them. And I don't mean, you know, injuriously. I mean just turn him into, you know, piles of drool and bile on the floor after a 10-minute workout. And, yeah, some of that, it's a lot of it is definitely geared towards pushing people to their absolute limits. But there's a lot more to it than that. And, I think back in the day, which is funny because it's only, 4 years ago or so, but there was a much greater emphasis on, skill training and all these other avenues besides the workout of the day on CrossFit.com. And that's one of the problems, too, is that the workout of the day on CrossFit.com, to people who are not involved directly, has become, the ultimate definition of CrossFit. And that's just not what it is, That's one program that is being put out there for people, and it's misinterpreted a lot. It's misperformed even more, and that's a big problem. One of the other ones is, of course, the pull-up, the kipping pull-up. I mean, I don't know how long this argument is going to go on, but it is absolutely absurd. And, if you hear someone say, well, it's a cheating pull-up. Well, it's not fucking cheating. You just don't understand the rules. You know what I mean? The kipping pull-up is not used to develop back and arm pulling strength. And as long as you understand and acknowledge that, then you can no longer say it's cheating. You know what I mean? It's used more as a metabolic conditioning tool in that context. And in that sense, it's one of the best tools out there. So to call it a cheating pull-up is just ignorant. It's just silly. And that drives me nuts. Because to me, that's such a simple thing to figure out.
Greg, would it be analogous? Would you say the kipping pull-up, I don't know if maybe this is a good analogy or not, you can tell me, to maybe saying that the swing is a cheating deadlift? I mean, would that be somewhat similar, I guess, in a sense? Or would you have a better analogy maybe for people?
I would say it's more analogous to like a push press or a push jerk.
Okay, that's a good analogy.
In other words, the end point and the start point are essentially the same. But, the manner in which you get there involves more of the body. Mm-hmm. So it would be like saying, okay, you have a weightlifter doing a push press and say, well, that's stupid, you're cheating. Well, no, it's not cheating. It's more appropriate for a weightlifter. A weightlifter never presses directly off the shoulder. That lift was eliminated from competition 30 years ago. Not to say that's not a beneficial auxiliary exercise, but, to say that push press is cheating because it's not a strict movement is a misunderstanding of the purpose of the exercise. Mm-hmm. And so the same thing goes with the kipping pull-up. I mean, the kipping pull-up, you have, you're moving your body the same amount of distance, less time, so you have a higher power output. That's really the key right there for the metabolic conditioning. And you're pulling in more muscle mass, to do this movement. So again, metabolic conditioning. Your body needs to supply more energy substrates to these working muscles, all that nonsense. In addition to that, though, you have, the huge benefits of flexibility, in the shoulders, the upper back, connective tissue strengthening. So you have all these other kind of side effects of this kipping pull-up that make it so important. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that no one has ever said, some have thought this, but no one has ever said, nor should they, that the kipping pull-up is the only pull-up to be used in CrossFit. That's just dumb, too. I mean, you're going to be doing weighted pull-ups, unweighted, strict pull-ups, chin-ups, L pull-ups, ice cream makers. I mean, you really need to be running the gamut. And I just wrote an article about this last performance menu, actually. It was, intended to be a filler article and turned out to be like 100 freaking pages. But, that's the key, is people lose sight of that, too. It's one tool in a very, very big toolbox. And, to rest so much argument on that one thing, to me, is just a colossal, misappropriation of time and effort.
And that seems to be, maybe the one of the biggest misunderstandings, then, and not just specifically the kipping pull-up, but it seems like there's a lot of misunderstanding of the use and the implementation of exercises. Is that probably pretty accurate?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, part of it, again, is that I think a lot of people don't quite understand what CrossFit is for. You know what I mean? They're not sure what the purpose is. And that's one of the big problems, too, I think, within the CrossFit community. That is still not well understood by a lot of people, and that's a big problem. That needs to be changed. In other words, you know, CrossFit is a general physical preparedness program. That's what it's always been intended to be. The problem is that some people have kind of taken the stance that it's the ultimate training program for anything. And that is just, that's just crazy. That's the most misguided notion there is, I think. And now if you take a grappler, you know, or MMA fighter, something like that, it's going to be pretty damn good for them. You know what I mean? That's, to me, that's about as close as it gets to being a sport-specific training program. Now, on top of that, of course, you're going to be doing a lot of sparring, a lot of skill work. But that can pretty much serve as, you know, a solid strength and conditioning program for that particular athlete. But
And, I mean, you're a pretty serious strength athlete, though, too, right? I mean, this is not just conditioning that you're doing for yourself, particularly, right?
Well, yeah, to clarify, though, I don't do CrossFit. I haven't done a CrossFit workout in almost 3 years. I use it with certain athletes that I train or other clients, but I don't do it personally because, yeah, I'm a competitive weightlifter. All I care about is snatching as much as possible and clean and jerking as much as possible. And to that end, CrossFit does not offer me anything.
But that just sort of speaks to what you just said, though. I mean, you're doing very specialized training for a specific sport.
Right.
You know, you're sort of saying that CrossFit may be appropriate for athletes in an off-season program and, you know, so forth. Is that how,
yeah,
you know, how would you best recommend it?
It's a case-by-case thing. I mean, athlete mm-hmm. to athlete, you need to decide, you know, what exactly they need to be doing. And for, depending on the athlete, yeah, it might fit in there in some off-season GPP stuff. I think for younger athletes who don't have good training backgrounds, you know, it can serve, if appropriately administered, you know, it can serve as a good foundation for their future specialization. But for someone who, you know, is already a specialist, you know, take Amy and I, okay, national champion weightlifter, you know, missed the world team by one spot last year primarily because of an injury. I would be stupid to have her doing CrossFit. And I think that depending on who you talk to in the weightlifting world, you know, some guys will do GPP work with their athletes, you know, every season. I wouldn't, you know, I think at the beginning of a career, you've got to kind of shore up some weak spots throughout a career. You know, you can kind of do some spot fixes here and there, but I don't think you ever need to return to that kind of general training. You know, once you've established your specialty, your discipline, that is what you train for. You know what I mean? And so I think that is the misunderstanding, and constantly, you know, I cruise through the CrossFit message board fairly regularly. I don't post very often anymore because you just get, you know, entangled in these retarded arguments, but there's this idea that CrossFit is the ideal solution for everyone, and, you know, oh, well, you know, this person does CrossFit, and she's a national champion. It's like, well, no. She's a Masters national champion, and she actually had to stop doing CrossFit, you know, three weeks out to even be able to compete at that level. And so there's a lot of just misconceptions out there, and largely related to the implementation. So, you know, I think that the answer is no, it's not appropriate for every single person. And for some people, it's a terrible idea. For the generalist, you know, fitness enthusiast kind of person, I think it's probably the best thing going out there in its very, you know, its most vague, nebulous sense, you know, that kind of approach to things. But, you know, again, implementation is key, and there's a lot of different ways to implement CrossFit, and some are great and some are, you know, like I said, kind of embarrassing to be associated with.
Well, so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, Greg, you know, because you do have such a varied background and you do work with, you do train people still, right? I mean, you mentioned that sort of
yeah.
the beginning. I'm going to give you two scenarios. One is more of a fitness oriented one. Someone comes in, wants, you know, let's do the classic one that needs to get leaner, wants to get in the quote unquote better shape. What's your general approach? How do you get that person down? What's your sort of general philosophy?
General philosophy one is because, you know, I've seen such a huge range of people. I mean, you know, on one hand, I'll get someone who comes in day one, has a great athletic background, you know, doesn't have any glaring flexibility shortcomings or, you know, recruitment shortcomings, any of that stuff. But then I'll also get someone who is, you know, 150 pounds overweight, has Crohn's disease, has horrible asthma, diabetes, you know, plantar fasciitis. I mean, just like reams of problems. And you just look at them and go, what the fuck am I going to do with you? But I think what it comes down to is progression. You know what I mean? And starting people off appropriately and just kind of feeling them out. So, for example, that last example I gave you, that's a real person. I mean, she is head to toe a huge mess. I think the first
I'm only laughing because I've been there.
What's that?
I'm only laughing because I've been there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the very first workout I did with her, I think I stuck her on a rower for maybe like, you know, 500 meters and just very, very slow. I think she was probably rowing like a 3-minute, you know, 500-meter split. It's very, very easy. And then I kind of went over and, you know, ran her through some dynamic mobility stuff, you know, whatever real basic stuff I could get her to do in her present condition, which wasn't a ton. And then I think we did, you know, squat to a bench. So she was well above parallel, you know, really kind of learning to sit back, keep her knees aligned with her feet, you know, extend her back and hold that spine in a good neutral position and feel that, control that movement. What else? Maybe, you know, overhead presses with dumbbells and like, you know, 5-pound dumbbells or something ridiculous like that. And really, that was more about me seeing how she moved, what she was able to do, than giving her a workout. You know, I didn't want to kick her ass that day. I had no interest in doing that. That's a bad approach, you know, for new clients. And that's another issue that's brought up a lot with CrossFit is like, oh, my God, you guys are going to kill someone one day. Well, no. A bad trainer is going to kill someone whether they do CrossFit or not. You know, a good trainer knows what to do whether CrossFit or not, you know. So, you know, from there, and I've been training this woman for about 2 years, we've very gradually progressed to the point where, A, she's lost a ton of weight, but B, her abilities have grown so greatly that I can pretty much set her loose on a workout and very rarely have to make any kind of corrective comments or anything. So, you know, she does actually a good amount of sandbag stuff, and a lot of it is, you know, like a Zerker squat or making her shoulder it and walk up the driveway at the Bergner compound, which is just hellacious, as I'm sure you remember.
Yeah, I mean, people that can't appreciate that, that's not an easy walk.
No, and I got to do it every day. And I, you know, that's my only my cardio training right there. And, you know, it's the CrossFit mentality in a sense that I'm going to select on a day, you know, maybe 3 to 5 exercises, and I'm going to run her through a circuit. I mean, really it's just circuit training. It's a circuit training with a smart selection of exercises, you know, instead of doing circuit training with tricep pushdowns and curls, you know. And there's really nothing new or revolutionary about that. It's really the combination of that circuit training and, you know, the functional movements. And to me, for me, that has gotten much better results than, you know, the typical, okay, I'm going to do some, you know, basic, you know, easy kind of more bodybuilding esque movements with you, and then we're going to do 20 minutes, 30 minutes of cardio afterwards. And I still resort to that on occasion with another client who is in really bad shape, but I train her out of a physical therapist's office, so I don't have a lot of equipment available. And, you know, so she does her little weightlifting stuff, not weightlifting in the Olympic weightlifting sense, but, you know, she's doing, like, lat pull-downs because she's real big and we don't really have a pull-up bar. We can't do, you know, ring rows or anything like that. And she does her little circuit, but it's a very slow circuit. I don't rush her through that because she will just absolutely crash if we get her going too hard. And then, you know, we move her over to the bike and I have her do intervals on the bike. And, again, it's all relative, you know, intensity for people. And, You tell people, well, I'm doing interval training. They're like, oh, you're going to kill that lady. No, you know, an interval for her, a sprint for her is not a sprint for, you know, you or me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all relative, and I think that that has to be kept in mind with the CrossFit thing, too, is that, you know, it's not like it's either 100% or nothing. No, for some people it's 10%, and for them that's a hard workout. So it's all just about, like, incremental progression, I think, and, you know, just kind of constant assessment and seeing what is working, what's not, what needs to be done, and what can be done. And a lot of it is just kind of, you know, biting your knuckle and being frustrated that this person isn't in perfect health. But there's only so much you can do with someone else's body.
Oh, absolutely. And I know it's funny, you know, I think the CrossFit community, you know, has the term scaling, and, you know, every community develops their own terminology, but I think the principles end up being the same sort of throughout. I think it harkens back to what you said at the beginning. It's probably a lot more similarities than there are differences.
Yeah.
Just the emotions get in the way sometimes, and that seems to be a smart progressional way of working someone through basically that style of programming. So I'm going to throw you a much different example. Let's say you get a high school football player. Obviously, this could depend on a lot of factors, but I'm going to speak in vague terms and just let you go at it. And, you know, we get a lot of people that either their parents working with kids or, you know, people that are coaches working with kids. You know, if they want to implement, is it appropriate to implement a CrossFit style workout? Because, you know, you and I both know, having been high school athletes, that coaches love to go hard and heavy. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe talk a little bit about that, how a high school athlete trains.
Well, and that's a good example, because in a case like that, I think CrossFit can play a part. You know, CrossFit is not going to be the strength and conditioning program for a football player. It can be a part of it. You know, I still think you have to have, you know, your good old-fashioned, you know, weightlifting stuff in there, which for them is going to be pretty much, you know, deadlift, squat, probably back squat and front squat, push press. You know, maybe power cleans, you know, push jerks, things like that, and really laying that foundation there. And then, in addition to that, you know, you've got your sprinting and agility stuff. But, you know, doing brief CrossFit circuits. And, I mean, for a football player, you know, what are they doing? 10 seconds of work and then 30 seconds of rest for the whole game. And so, you know, for someone like that, I'm talking about like a 5 to 8 minute CrossFit circuit, maybe 2 times a week, 3 times a week at the most. It would definitely not be, it would not be the greater portion of their training. It would be in there. It'd be small, and it'd probably be confined to relatively simple movements. And it, certainly not with a high school athlete. I wouldn't have them doing, you know, the O-lifts within a metabolic workout. I think that needs to be reserved for people who are very technically proficient. You know, a guy like Josh Everett, for those who are listening, who knows who he is, he's a good example who came in and had that great weightlifting background and can use those movements in a workout, and it's not an issue. There's no injury risk with it. The injury risk comes when people don't know what they're doing, and that's going to happen at 1 rep or 30 reps. Doesn't matter, if, you know. If you're being stupid about what you're doing, you're going to get hurt one way or the other. And so, you know, I think, again, it's playing a part there. It's not the whole thing. And, you know, I don't know that it's ever the entire thing. And one of the problems with CrossFit is it's very hard to draw, you know, hard edges around that definition. Is what is CrossFit, and when does it stop being CrossFit? You know, okay, so I'm doing these circuits one day, and then one day, well, I'm going to, you know, front squat, I'm going to snatch to a heavy single, and then I'm going to, you know, do driveway sprints. Well, is that still CrossFit, or is that just conventional strength and conditioning training? You know what I mean? So that's one of the problems, too, is, like, if you are associated with CrossFit, suddenly everything you do is CrossFit, whereas if you're
right,
not associated, it's not CrossFit. So it's very confusing at times to even understand what you're doing and you know, explain it to people. So again, it's really a case by case thing, and I think it's all about who's supervising and who's administering and you know, how it's being implemented, whether or not it's going to be effective and safe.
Absolutely, and I'm going to shift gears a little bit into something else you're pretty passionate about, which is Olympic weightlifting, which can be quite controversial itself. You even said something earlier that caught my attention. You said that a lot of coaches are teaching it wrong. So I wonder, right off the bat, can you go a little bit into that, and then I'll sort of follow up with one of the big controversies around weightlifting.
Well, you know, it's really, it's like anything else. Anything else that is physically, complex, skill-oriented, there are always going to be people who are not as experienced or, well-versed as they believe they are, and who are not putting in the time to better themselves and are teaching other people. So, you know, go on YouTube, and I see these videos all the time. I don't know who these people are who sit around and find them, but they always send them to me, and I thank them for it because I don't want to sit around and, comb the internet for this kind of shit. But, the guys who will kind of deadlift a bar, bounce it 3 times off the platform, and bounce it right into a power clean, and call that a power clean. Or the guy, there was a video that was going around a couple weeks ago of a football player cleaning a good amount of weight. It was a small guy doing a good amount of weight, but he had a guy standing behind him, spotting him, like pulling him up, and then a guy standing immediately in front of him, helping the bar up. And it was just unreal to me that anyone could sit there and be seriously trying to clean with someone, someone's face 6 inches all from right. their own. But, and it's just like, what, what's going on in these places? Now, granted, those are all pretty impressive feats of strength, but the issue really is not that, okay, well, yes, it's difficult, and yes, that's impressive, but is it effective training for what these guys are doing? So the power clean, of course, is the staple Olympic lift in, football and most sports, really, because it's generally the easiest one to teach and the only one these guys know at all how to do. But if you really go and look around, they're really not power cleaning. Very rarely are they power cleaning. They're kind of, if they're pulling from the ground, they're basically doing, a stiff leg deadlift into an upright row. And granted, it's a difficult exercise, and a lot of these guys are moving a shitload of weight that way. But, what are we trying to train with a power clean? We're trying to train explosiveness, of the legs and hips. Well, if we're pulling the bar up with the arms and only the back and the hips, we're not getting out of the exercise what we're trying to get out of it. So what's the point? I think that just goes overlooked. A lot of guys just figure, if they're taking it from the ground and they're getting it onto their shoulders, it must be doing what we're trying to make it do. You know what I mean? There's never really any consideration of how changing that movement, which for some people seems apparently very subtly, which, to me is like obscenely, different, but there apparently isn't that consideration of, this is really completely defeating the purpose of doing this exercise and exposing these athletes to injury, which, as a football player, you don't need more exposure to injury. You're already going to get fucked up playing that sport, pretty much guaranteed. So you don't need more risk in the weight room. You need effective exercises to make you stronger and faster and more resilient to getting, your ass wiped into the field. So I think
just to play off that a little bit, because, I think that's the next big controversy, and I'm sure you've heard this to ad nauseum. Coaches either love or hate the Olympic lift for their athletes, and, yeah. What are your thoughts as far as, does it help performance of an athlete? Because there's a lot of those, I know what I'm talking about, that will say it doesn't have any carryover to an athlete outside of weightlifting.
Right. Well, and therein is the absolute critical point of the issue, is that, no, it doesn't help these athletes when they're not doing it correctly. And, I don't know how to simplify it to these guys any better than that. It's like, you can't expect an exercise to do what it's intended to do if you're not actually performing that exercise. You know what I mean? So it's like, saying, well, having your quarterback do throwing drills isn't going to help him be a better quarterback because, he's not a good thrower. Well, no, dude, you got to teach him how to fucking throw before he practices. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing. And if these guys were doing it correctly, then I think there's absolutely no question that it's going to be helpful. I mean, you look at Olympic weightlifters, you know, the athletes, and you can see very clearly they're about as explosive as they come. I mean, there's photos floating all over the place of these guys post-lift floating like 80 feet in the air because they have casually jumped up in excitement. You know, that kind of explosiveness it doesn't just come simply through some weird, you know, genetic accident. I mean, that's 15 years of snatching and cleaning and power snatching and power cleaning and jerking. And, you know, to say that it's not, that wouldn't be helpful for any ground-based athlete is just silly to me. And, yeah, I mean, maybe it's not going to help a swimmer very much, but, you know, a football player, a soccer player, you know, a sprinter, anyone who is driving forcefully off the ground or, you know, cutting rapidly, changing directions like that, you know, I can't fathom how that couldn't be viewed as beneficial to have, you know, more hip and leg power, you know.
Well, and, you know, I mean, that's a good lead-in because, I mean, we were just talking about, well, a lot of these coaches, especially, I think, you get on the high school level, where coaches, I mean, not to harp on them, but they try the best they can with what they have available. So, you know, I don't want to beat up the high school coach, but, you know, they tend to be the least equipped at times with both knowledge and facilities. You know, do you have recommendation for those coaches that don't have the access to, you know, yourself or Mike Burner or a lot of great weightlifting coaches if they want to implement some of these techniques?
Well, yeah, that is the tough part. And I think now, though, that the scene is changing a bit because you have Mike Burner and his website, and you have my website. And now there's so much more information available for free, and that's very easily accessible thanks to the Internet, that I think, you know, the number of excuses, which formerly were pretty legitimate, I think they're waning very quickly. So, you know, take a guy who may be a high school football coach, and like you said, most high school football coaches are also the high school strength coaches for their players. And, you know, they're working with what they have, and a lot of them don't have that experience. But, you know, going on to, say, Mike Bergner's website, he's got training templates available. The guy will answer any email or any phone call that he gets. And, you know, he'll sit there and talk to people for hours at a time. You know, I'm the same way. I answer every email that comes in, not always the same day, but, you know, I always answer. And, you know, we have tons of free information on that website, videos. We have video demos of just about every weightlifting exercise you can possibly imagine, and I'm actually in the process of updating all of those. So the stuff is out there. Now, granted, that's not the same thing as being trained personally by an experienced weightlifting coach, and that would be ideal. And, you know, I think, though, that, too, is becoming something that's more and more accessible just through seminars. And, I mean, yeah, $450, $600 for a weekend seminar, that's a good chunk of change, especially for a high school coach. But I think it's, you know, it's an investment in a career, not just, you know, some silly waste of money and time. And, you know, not to toot my horn, but that new book of mine that just came out is fairly helpful with a lot of that stuff, too. I mean, it literally takes you from, you know, step zero all the way to the end in terms of teaching and preparing an athlete to do the lifts. So, and that was exactly my intention, is to say, okay, well, this is exactly, you've got an athlete who's never touched a barbell before. How do you get that athlete to snatching a weight and snatching a weight that's going to be heavy enough, you know, to be effective for this athlete? And, you know, that's all in there. So.
Well, and Greg, I know you don't like tooting your own horn. I know you don't like tuning your own horn too much, but for people that don't know what you're talking about, you have the new book, Olympic Weightlifting, A Complete Guide for Athletes and Coaches. So tell me a little about the book. I mean, there's a lot of the exercises. Are there programs in there that coaches can use as well?
Yeah, well, essentially, you know, there's a number of Olympic weightlifting books out there. and all of them written by people I have very much respect for, Tommy Kono in particular. But what was unquestionably missing from them was a real clear progression on how to learn and teach the lifts. You know, it's like there were these pieces of information here and there that you could kind of glean from these books and these websites, but there wasn't a coherent system or anything out there. And so what I did was, I like I said, step zero all the way to the end. So, you know, this is how you teach the Olympic squat. This is exactly the kind of position. This is how you check for a correct position, you know. This is how you, you know, get this athlete flexible enough for these positions. I go over, you know, the necessary equipment. There's complete teaching progressions for the snatch, and then a huge section, you know, looking real closely at you know, each kind of segment of the snatch. Same thing for the clean, same thing for the jerk. There is then a programming section that basically discusses, you know, how programming is handled. And that's a tough section because there's a lot of contention, of course, in that particular realm, as with all disciplines, obviously. But then there's sample programs. There's a whole section on nutrition and supplementation, on flexibility, and there's one on competition, you know, on counting attempts, you know, making weight, all that stuff. So, I mean, really, I tried to get every single possible thing one would need to go from having zero experience with the lifts to being fairly successful, you know, as an intermediate level competitive weightlifter. So, and of course, you know, it's not a substitute for a coach. Nothing will ever be a substitute for a coach, but it's about as good as it gets without having a coach.
And I'm looking at the site. You also have a seminar DVD, and I know Olympic lifting is really helpful to have one of those things that people can watch, too, if they've never. So, I mean, for about $60, you can get an outstanding book and the DVD, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, and the seminar DVD, I mean, I've been trying to make a DVD for the last 2 years, and it was just too difficult timing it and all that. So we just decided to film a seminar I did in Portland several months ago and, you know, cut that together into a DVD and keep it simple. And, you know, what's in that DVD is the learning, the teaching progressions that are in the book. So it's essentially, you know, me explaining, Amy and Naya demonstrating these things. And so it's like the fundamental stuff that you need out of that book. And so, like you said, it's a good visual aid. And, yeah, there's pictures in the books, but like you know, it's very difficult to accurately represent movement in a series of photographs, especially very quick movement. So all those things, of course, are demonstrated in the DVD. So that's a nice package there to have, and that'll do you pretty well until you can get to a coach and kind of get checked out or get to a seminar or anything like that.
Absolutely. That's a killer. Actually, for that price, that's a really awesome deal. Because I know you definitely know your stuff when it comes to this. So definitely highly recommend that people follow through on that. They're interested. I just want to get your thoughts. I know this will probably get you going a little bit. What do you say to those coaches who go, you know what, I really don't feel confident in weightlifting. I'm going to use kettlebells to substitute for weightlifting. What's your thought on that?
My thought is if you want to use kettlebells, absolutely use kettlebells. I like kettlebells. I use them occasionally. I use them with my clients, but I would say don't fool yourself into believing they're an accurate substitute for, you know, a barbell snatch or a barbell clean and jerk. You know what I mean?
Now, why is that?
It's another tool. It's you can have something that's called a snatch and something that's called a clean and jerk, but it is really fundamentally a different exercise, whether you're doing you know, a swing snatch or, you know, a dead hang snatch. It's a very different thing. And, you know, they're definitely beneficial movements. And I like a lot of kettlebell stuff. I mean, I went and did the RKC thing. I had some really good conversations with Pavel. I think he's a great guy. I think he's really sharp, very, very humble, very friendly. And there's a lot of good people associated with that organization, too. There's a lot of dorks, but, you know, like we said, that's true with all of them. So, you know, I think that's the biggest mistake is trying to say, well, here's this one thing that's good, so I'm going to try to make up this other thing to replace it. Well, no, use this other stuff if you want, you know, but don't try to replace something that's irreplaceable. I mean, there is nothing that will do what a barbell snatch and a barbell clean and jerk will do.
And why do you say that? I mean, well, what's the fundamental differences for people that don't know and are, you know, maybe hearing this argument for the first time?
I think probably the key to focus on is with a snatch, with a clean, you have this perfectly concerted hip and knee extension. So what happens, you know, you get that bar to about mid-thigh, the knees push forward naturally, of course. Don't go start teaching people to double knee bend intentionally. And the knee and the hip extend together. I mean, it's this amazing natural movement. You know, it happens with the vertical jump, all this stuff. With, say, a kettlebell swing or a kettlebell snatch, what you get is a very different thing. The relation of that hip and knee extension is very different. It's really more knee and then hip extension. It's not the same, you know, coordinated movement. And like I said, it's good stuff. And I kettlebell swings are really the one thing that I will always use when it comes to kettlebells. I don't use them a whole lot for other stuff, you know, Turkish get-ups, things like that I like. But, you know, like a kettlebell clean to me, it doesn't really serve a purpose. That's really more just, you know, spinning your elbow around this object that's temporarily fixed in space. I think the more experience you have with both those things, the clearer that difference becomes. And I do think it's very easy for people who are not experienced with the barbell lift to assume that it's a pretty good replication of it. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not the case. It would be nice if it were because, you know, it's a lot cheaper to get a couple kettlebells than, you know, a nice set of works on bumpers and a, you know, bar. I would say arguably much easier to teach, you know, some good kettlebell movements than really, really proficient snatch and clean and jerk on a bar. But again, you know, like you said, you have to work with what you've got. And if you're a coach and there's no way in hell your school or your organization is going to supply you with a dozen bar and bumper sets, you know what? You got to make do with what you got, and, you know, dumbbells and kettlebells and sandbags it is. And you can do a lot of very good training with that stuff. And, you know, by no means is that a huge blow, you know, to the effectiveness of the program. It's just different.
And, you know, we get a lot of people that train at home, have home gyms, and in fact, I have a very good friend who's getting the Olympic lifts, and he trains at home. And, you know, the most common question is, what do you start with? Do you start with a bar? Do you start with bumpers, even the shoes? Where do you recommend people start with if they're interested in starting to implement this into their own programs?
In terms of buying equipment, you mean?
Yeah, as far as, yeah, getting set up. You know, if they want to start setting up like a little home gym and they're trying to decide what do they have to do to get set up so they can be successful at, you know, at least becoming, I would say, proficient and getting some of the benefits out of Olympic lifting.
Well, a bar obviously needs to be purchased, and I think you know, a lot of people will try to save $50 and buy a really cheap bar, and those tend to be, you know, like 32 millimeters instead of, you know, what is standard for a men's Olympic bar, which is 28 millimeters. They don't spin well. Some of them are even shorter. I mean, there's some wacky bars out there. Spending, you know, $300 is a very cheap Olympic bar. And for someone whose home gym is just getting started, that's going to be more than enough for them. That'll be great. Penley bars from Wichita Falls Weightlifting, or there's the new bar that's made by York, the Bergner and Ripito bar. You know, both of those are good kind of entry-level bars. And that'll get you working on a bar that's, you know, the right size, that spins well, and that you can use, you know, good bumper plates with. The bumpers, same thing. I mean, if you're working out by yourself, you can get some very cheap, like rubber with brass hub stuff, like the old school BFS ones that they used to sell. I'm sure they mm-hmm. still have them. I mean, those things are dirt cheap for bumper plates, and they will hold up remarkably well. That hub will shake loose, and it'll be kind of annoying, but they're completely usable, and I mean, you can just use those things for 15 years, especially if you buy yourself. So there's really no need to go and buy, you know, a $300 pair of, 15 kilo bumpers. That's a kind of not a wise choice of, your training expenses there. But so getting that set up, and then I think shoes is a big one, and I think shoes are kind of neglected to a great extent, and people try to get by without them, and people argue, well, I lift barefoot. And, well, barefoot is sweet when you're deadlifting, sometimes squatting, but with the real ballistic reconnection with the earth that you're going to have, you know, while snatching and cleaning and jerking, you don't want to do it barefoot. And, you know, more importantly, you're going to be down, if you're doing it correctly, you're going to be at the absolute rock bottom squat in a very upright torso, knees forward position. And if your feet, you know, your ankles and stuff are not very well aligned, you're asking for, you know, hip, knee, back, shoulder problems even. So I think that's real key. And, I mean, you can get decent shoes from VS Athletics for $70 these days. So it's not a huge expenditure. I think it's very, very much worth it.
I think that's really sound advice. And, you know, and just maybe really quickly, we're sort of wrapping up. I really appreciate your time, Greg. But explain to me why the spinning of the bar is important, because I think a lot of people still try to cheat that a lot.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. When you're going from pulling that bar up to pushing it up overhead, the wrist has to turn over from basically hanging down to pointing up. And if that bar doesn't turn, that has to rotate all the plates themselves, and you've got a lot of inertia on those plates. So doing that is very difficult, one. Two, it's inconsistent. So if you have a bar that spins well on, you know, one lift, and the next lift it locks up, or, you know, the worst is if it starts spinning and then locks up partway through the lift, there's a lot of potential for shoulder and wrist injury and elbow injury. So, you know, you could get by performance-wise with a shitty bar, and you would be a strong dude, you know, having to overcome that rotational inertia there, but it's too much of an injury risk, in my opinion, to really say that's okay for people to do if they're going to be serious about this stuff. The clean, same thing. Yeah. Trying to get your elbows around, if that bar doesn't turn over, you know, there's a very good chance that you're going to receive that bar with your elbows pointing straight down, which means there's a good chance you're going to collapse forward, that elbow's going to hit your thigh, you're going to fracture your wrist, if not, you know, worse. So, you know, I think it's a good investment, and, you know, a decent bar is going to last you a long time. I mean, I sucked it up, and I bought really nice bars, and, you know, I use a Worksan bar personally. It's a lifetime warranty, and granted, it's a $700 bar, and the competition bars are even more, but, you know, I'm never going to have to buy a new barbell.
Right. I think that's the most important. And, you know, and just to sort of finish up here, Greg, you know, I just want to talk about the performance menu really fast. You know, what can people find in it, and, you know, what is it? And I know it's one of the few resources that I'll actually read online. There's a lot of garbage out there. So if you tell us just briefly about the performance menu, what it is, what people can look for, and where they can get it.
Yeah, it's performancemenu.com is my website. It's you'll find all the info there. You'll find a free issue. There's a lot of free articles. We put up one free article every month. So essentially what it is, it's an online journal. It's a, you know, PDF format. So it looks on screen like a magazine, but, of course, it's not in print. And so each month we usually put out about 4 to 5 articles, and each month there's also a section of recipes, and as of late, well, late being the last couple of years, they're exclusively by a guy named Scott Hagnis, who owns a gym up in Portland, really good trainer, and just a total culinary genius. And so, you know, he does recipes that are all paleo-friendly, so no gluten, no wheat, so all kinds of real, you know, meat, vegetable, nuts and seeds, all that good stuff. Kind of deal. And the content itself is geared largely towards kind of strength training and Olympic lifting. And it took that turn after I took it over, you know, 2 years ago. It had been more of a generalist thing and kind of more nutrition-oriented previously. And, you know, we do write about CrossFit, and but it's kind of I don't know how to say this without getting myself in some kind of trouble, but it's probably too late for that. It's not CrossFit party line stuff. You know what I mean? It's real honest information on how to make CrossFit effective, you know, what does and doesn't work, how I use it, obviously, that sort of thing. And so I think that's very much appreciated. We're not an epic, you know, publication. We don't have the kind of readership of Muscle and Fiction or even the CrossFit Journal, but we have a very loyal, you know, readership. And I think it's because we've consistently put out very useful information, you know. What I try to do with every issue is say, I want articles that someone can read and immediately say, all right, here's something cool I can implement in my training, you know, tomorrow, or in, you know, in my nutrition or whatever it may be, instead of just these weird kind of like anecdotes or like this vague stuff that's like, yeah, that's kind of interesting, but what the hell do I do with it? And I think that's one of the big problems out there. And so we have a pretty good time putting it out there. It's something I would read if I didn't have to sit there and edit it. But by the time that thing goes out, I'm sick of it. So.
Well, one thing I'm really impressed with is that you guys are critical, not in the sense of, you know, bashing anyone, but you guys take a very critical eye to everything, whether it's something that you like to do or something that you're looking at, and I respect that greatly. So it's not like you guys are playing favorites, and you guys always give a good perspective on a lot of the current methods being used. And the recipes, I have to say, too, are outstanding. So definitely a must-have resource for people that, you know, really want to take their training seriously, want to have some honest information, sort of cut through a lot of the BS that's in the industry. So, Greg, I want to thank you again for your time. It's been awesome.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
And, again, I just want to give the website. Absolutely. I want you guys to kick my ass again. the website is performancemenu.com. Greg Everett, thank you so much for your time. And make sure to check out both the book, which is the book again, Greg, is
Olympic Weightlifting and Complete Guide for Athletes and Coaches. And we sell it directly on our website. And, of course, it's on Amazon and all that stuff. But they have trouble keeping it in stock. So you can get it quicker from us.
Awesome, man. I appreciate your time, and we'll definitely talk soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Thank you.